Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The 2026 State Supreme Court race is shaping up with the first liberal candidate to launch her campaign. Plus, university leaders from across the state weigh in on potential changes to federal aid programs that students rely on. And we have the highlights from the state Republican convention as the party looks to unite heading into next year. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for May 23rd.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We begin this week with where we left off last week, is the big question of whether Governor Tony Evers and GOP leaders are any closer to reaching a deal on tax cuts and budget deliberations. Well, what we do know from your reporting, J.R., is that they did meet twice this week, which is a promising sign. After it came after Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu said last week that they need to meet in person with the governor in order to finish the budget on time. Now, what was discussed? How close are they? Those are things that we don't really know so far. But, Jared, what have you learned from this meeting that happened on Thursday?
So they went in, actually, Wednesday they met. So what I was told, I found out earlier this week they were going to meet on Wednesday. Then Robin Voss and the speaker went had caucus that afternoon, told members that they met in the morning, again in the afternoon. Didn't share any details of what they were talking about, just that things were going in the right direction. Like, again, the fact they're in conversations is probably a positive sign, especially because of where we're at the calendar. So we're getting into late May. The Joint Finance Committee hasn't really done anything. No offense to like taking out 612 items that the governor put in the budget, but that happens every 2 years. They haven't really gotten to work on the meat of this budget. And the calendar is getting short real quick. Now, remember everybody, we're not federal government. If there's no new budget by July 1st, we keep operating as is. Everything's fine. But there's a symbolism of being done on time. So to get done by June 30th, that means through both houses, you kind of have to walk backward. You need 2 days for the Assembly and Senate to take it up on the floor. You need about a week for the drafters to go through the bill, like actually what happens in the Finance Committee, and actually put into a bill form. Oh, by the way, this time they want to take out numbers and use all words because the governor can't strike out letters. He can strike out numbers because of the Supreme Court. So that might add the drafting period. So you start walking backward, and you kind of need like mid-June a budget out of finance to be done by June 30th with a little bit of room to spare. You can push it though. That's not a whole lot of room to do all this stuff. So their best bet right now is probably big, call them omnibus motions. You take a bunch of agencies or areas, lump into one big motion, and they knock out a bunch of agencies. You only do that if you have agreements, and you probably need the governor to make an agreement on this. So can they agree on taxes, on education, on childcare? We'll see. Now, the other thing people are talking about this week is, what do you gain from this, right? So the governor, he's watched for years. He goes, okay, I'm gonna give you this proposal that people like. Look at the Marquette poll, they like this proposal. Mm-hmm. And Republicans go, that's nice, and ignore it. He can get something done. Like he can get a little bit, and not how to define little just yet, on education, on childcare, whatever his priorities are. He can get a little bit in exchange for signing a tax cut, which, oh, by the way, is beneficial for him politically if he runs next year. For Republicans, what do they get? They get a tax cut. Like, that's probably the calculation of, we would get the governor to sign expansion of that second lowest tax bracket for what income it covers. We would get a retirement income break. We want those things. It's worth the trade-off of, okay, we got to do X on education and Y over here. The other reality is, and this has been true for the entire process, nobody I talk to thinks the Senate Republicans can get a budget through the caucus with just GOP votes that the governor would sign. Now, they could pass one, he'd veto a bunch of stuff, but to get a tax cut signed, you're probably not getting that done without something that these three, four, whatever number of Republicans aren't happy about the rest of the budget. So this might be the best path forward. It's not a done deal. There's lots of hurdles to overcome, but this may be the path they go to get this thing done.
Right, and what we also heard from the co-chairs of JFC last week is that, well, we're waiting for fiscal estimates. We're waiting for this. It always seems like they have an answer when we as reporters ask them, well, what's taking so long? What's going on? But you do see other stuff happening behind the scenes that they may be a part of, may not. But it's a good sign that they are meeting and looking to, you know, wine and dine and get some deals going. Because even if Evers doesn't, you know, seek re-election, you know, maybe he wants to just have a budget that he can be proud of, right? Be something that I sign this, it's over with, all right, I'm not going to seek a third term. So we could also just expect too, usually JFC meets on Tuesdays and Thursdays. If they don't meet by next week, we're looking in for some really long days at joint finance committees. And like you said, they're going to lump a lot of stuff together, but it's going to take a long time and much more longer sessions are ahead.
They keep saying we're on time, which is true. You're not late till you're late.
Right, right.
That's my time, but they're getting pretty close to being late.
Yes. All right. Let's get on to another story this week as the 2026 state Supreme Court race is heating up. Well, why? Because a liberal has officially announced her candidacy against conservative justice Rebecca Bradley. That is Wisconsin Appeals Court Chris Taylor. Now, before becoming appeals court judge, you might remember her because Taylor served nearly 10 years as a Democrat in the Assembly and previously worked for Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin as a public policy director. She made her rounds with reporters this week, and that was obviously something that I asked about and many others did, is about how do you remain impartial given your past work with Planned Parenthood? Let's just take a listen to what she had to say.
I worked for Planned Parenthood 15 years ago. You know, you usually do not see judges recuse themselves because they work for a law firm that has an attorney before them. But again, it's on a case-by-case basis. I take it seriously. People need to be able to have faith in the judiciary, and that's what I do every single day in looking at cases and making a decision as to whether I can be as fair and impartial as people deserve. As a judge, every day I am focused on making sure people in the state of Wisconsin have access to justice, and that's what I think the people want as a justice on the state Supreme Court, someone who is going to put their rights first, someone who is going to be impartial and be as fair as possible in reaching really important decisions that impact people's lives.
So she is announcing her bid, and if she were to win, or what she's seeking right now, is that it would expand liberals' majority on the bench, of course, that right now is 4-3. And 4-3 is going to be solidified, cemented, until at least 2028. So this is likely a race that we won't see as much influence, money. You know, it was just this past April that we saw over $100 million invested in the high-stakes race between Crawford and Schimmel. But there's still a lot of play. And for Taylor, you know, she has somewhat of a rap sheet, right? I mean, they could pull a lot of stuff that she said in the past that we are likely going to see in ads. Meanwhile, for conservative Rebecca Bradley, she's really trying to maintain a conservative majority right now so it doesn't get weakened if she were to lose.
This is going to be a fascinating race. Now, look, Chris looked at running in 2025, decided last year not going to run, cleared the way for no real primary for Susan Crawford, became the liberal candidate, and then won the seat. In political politics, you kind of earn your shot by doing that. So there was kind of a feeling of, okay, Chris earned this. She's going to be the one. What I'm bringing that up is somebody else could come out of the woodwork to run. But there's a feeling of, we talked about that judge up in Clark County who passed on running to make some calls. Chris announced she's got a team in place. She has the endorsement of all four liberals in the court once it begins work in August. This is basically hers now. Like, she's kind of pushed everybody aside. So assuming nothing else happens, nobody else comes out of the woodwork or she doesn't get the primary, it's an interesting case study of, is it the formula or the apparatus for liberals? The formula has been female sitting judge, former prosecutor. Susan Crawford, Janet Protasiewicz, Jill Karofsky, Rebecca Dowd have all three things on the resume. Chris is obviously a woman, obviously is a judge, has not been a prosecutor. Is that a big deal? People have argued to me that when you have that as a liberal, you can use it to defend yourself against an attack on crime, but also throw a punch. Remember, this spring's race, Susan Crawford made crime almost not really a deficit for her. She threw hits at Brad Schimmel over when he was a prosecutor, about donations to people that, you know, were before him. She made it a wash. Can Chris do that without that background? That's a big question. But it might be the apparatus. I mean, look, the spring electorate now is way more Democrat than it used to be. That's just reality. So it doesn't matter. Chris also happens to fit a profile of a key constituency, female, college-educated voters who care about abortion rights. She's one of them. That might be a big deal. So we'll see how that works. Now, for conservatives, they're wondering, all right, Rebecca Bailey told me last month she's going to run. I'm picking up more kind of like concerns or chatter from conservatives of, what if she doesn't? Maybe there's something else out there. We talked about the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Mm-hmm. That's a possibility. You know, will she apply for it? The deadline, I think, was this past week to apply for that position. They don't announce who applied, but they'll now go through a process where they identify candidates. Is that an off-ramp for her? Because the reality is Republicans and conservatives don't do well in spring elections right now. The money is not there, the apparatus, or the money was there the spring, but they face some challenges. So might she seek an off-ramp? Might she not run, period? And then there is this kind of feeling from conservatives of, what's it say if you have an incumbent justice who is beloved by the Federal Society who says, I'm not doing this? What's it say about your chances of winning spring races going forward? So there's some real like, yeah, she says she's going to run, but until we see it, we're nervous that maybe she won't be the candidate, and that makes things even tougher for us next spring.
Like you said, it's going to be a fascinating race, mm-hmm. if it's this actual matchup, yeah. too. We'll see. All right. Also, a lot of other campaign news in other congressional districts that we want to talk about, starting with the first congressional district. A familiar name, Randy Brice, he announced that he is going to run again for Wisconsin's first congressional district. That is a seat currently held by Congressman Brian Stile. Meanwhile, on the other side, looking at the 5th congressional district, Ben Steinhoff, he has launched a bid as well. These are two Democrats, but let's first start with Brice. I mean, he was a rising star back in 2018 when he sought to challenge now former House Speaker Paul Ryan. Ryan stayed in the race and then announced his resignation. That's when we saw the emergence of Brian Stile. He won, I believe, a little bit over 12 points, mm-hmm. 13 points. Wasn't that close of a race, but it's a familiar face. He also came known as Iron Stash. He's a former union worker. So he's got the profile there. It's just going to be a different political climate for him this time around.
He raised $8.6 million in that race, which is an eye-popping number for a challenger. The thing, though, is most of that money came in when Paul Ryan was going to be his opponent. He became a cause for Democrats. He also had this viral moment, had a rollout video, talked about his mom's struggles with multiple sclerosis, about him being an iron worker, said, I want to trade place with Paul Ryan, have him work the iron, essentially. It went viral. This rollout video got drowned out because Crystal announced the same day that he did that she's running for the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Not a great start when you get overshadowed by the race. Usually, you kind of make a couple calls and say, hey, anything going on? I should be aware of this week to try and avoid that, but put that aside. The first district is about 4 points better for Democrats now than it was in 2018. Brian Stile still wins by double digits in that seat. My questions are, one, can Brice have the same finance magic he had before? He's still got a great fundraising list. It's massive. Will it help? Two, don't forget, he, during the course of the campaign, back in 2018, he came out, he was arrested 9 times, went for driving under the influence. He was behind on his support payments. Like, there's all the stuff that kind of came out, like, he's got some baggage. Okay, fast forward to now. Democrats are watching, and Republicans too, will there be a new map in place for 2026? We talked about those lawsuits with the Supreme Court. Some real hurdles to get there, but if there's a new map, all bets are off. Totally differently. Current map, things as is, Brian Stile, $2.75 million in the bank at the end of April. Probably not a great chance for Brice to win. Not going to rule it out. 2026 would be a challenging year for Republicans. Just have the reconciliation bill that passed the House this week. They're already teeing up ads about what that would do, so watch that. But just this feeling of the consultants in D.C. see the first as a real opportunity. People in Wisconsin go, it's not really that competitive. Yes, Tony Evers came close to winning it in 2022 in governor's race. But Stile always outruns top of the ticket. Good years and bad years wins by 10 points. So we'll see.
And there was also a true test, too, just this past November with a Democrat, longtime Democratic lawmaker, former, I should say, Peter Barca. He went and sought that seat against Brian Stile. Wasn't really close either. So that's always just indicators to see how that district is. But like you said, I mean, it could be a Different ball game completely if there's new maps in place. All right, as we do almost every week, going to wrap up some of the bills that were in committee this week and that will be advancing, likely that we'll see on the Senate and Assembly floor. Let's just start with Senate Bill 36 that would eliminate income taxes on tips. Obviously, a huge conversation right now in Washington, D.C. Well, there's also a Wisconsin effort to not have taxes on tips here in Wisconsin. SJR 10, this is a familiar resolution that would ban governments from closing places of worship during a public health emergency. This has been going on and talked about since, obviously, the COVID pandemic. AB 237 would expand Wisconsin's safe haven law to 30 days. Just a quick explainer about this right now. If you do drop off an infant in front of a fire station, you know, it has to be within 72 hours-ish of when that baby was born. Right now, GOP lawmakers are looking to expand that to 30 days. So these are just some of the conversations that were being held at the Capitol this week.
Yeah, interesting, too. There's also some stuff on data centers. We have data centers coming galore. Two bills this week. One, they would expand the sales tax exemption for stuff that goes into data centers. Big incentive that's helped attract in Wisconsin. And two, it's called a TIF district, Tax Incremental Finance District. That is what locals use to basically help redevelop blighted areas. You take an area, designate as a TIF, and then any new property tax revenue you get off the development goes to pay for the infrastructure improvements. Once a TIF expires, that revenue goes back to schools and everybody else. What I'm bringing that up is there's a cap of 12% of your overall equalized value. These data centers are huge projects.
Oh, yeah.
When they come in, you have to get basically exception from the legislature to exceed that cap. They want to have a blanket one saying, hey, anybody gets a data center, they can worry about that cap of 12%. The question is raised, though, well, why those guys? Why not everybody? Why would you say about data centers for that exception, not just give locals more authority about what they can do with their development tools?
All right, moving on to that big, beautiful bill that's been talked about in the federal government after the House narrowly passed it early yesterday morning. Talking about this because university leaders from across the state technical colleges, UW system, are speaking out a provision in there that could make students pay more for college. This is what it would do. University leaders slammed aspects of the plan that would overhaul student loan programs, specifically certain provisions like replacing a dozen student loan repayment plans down with just two. That would be like a standard monthly rate students would have to pay, and a new income-based plan. Now, if enacted, these changes, among many others in this massive bill, could force students into more expensive repayment plans. And we heard from some students there at this press conference at Madison College say, I won't be able to pay more in order to stay in school. You will be forcing me to choose between going to school or just working full time. So let's just first hear from some university officials, specifically Jay Rothman at the UW system, kind of slamming these provisions.
Let me be blunt. It simply makes no sense for the United States right now to narrow educational opportunities if our country is going to have an opportunity to win the global war for talent. I am dumbfounded that cutting educational opportunities would even be considered when our economic vibrancy as a nation is at stake. Yet the House of Representatives this morning approved a budget package that will roll back educational opportunities for students that, like those who are with us today. It is not too late for Congress to reverse course and do the right thing for Wisconsin students and families and preserve opportunities for future generations.
So this is just one of several provisions that a lot of Democrats and Republicans are speaking out in this big, beautiful bill. I mean, but it's really all about passing President Donald Trump's legislative agenda, what also it includes tax breaks, slashing government funding, also broader security measures, Medicaid cuts. I mean, it goes on and on and on. This is just one caveat that university leaders were talking about.
Yeah, and it comes as a backdrop for the university of the pressures on state funding. They're asking for more money there. And the cuts to research that they also have hit them. So got a couple of things going on for themselves.
All right, real quick, just want to touch on the latest debacle facing Milwaukee Public Schools. Of course, they're going through a lead crisis and many other things, but what we've talked about mostly on this show is them making their financial statements and getting them in on time to the Department of Public Instruction. Well, right now, MPS is facing another deadline, and they've already missed some parts of that. The Department of Public Instruction warned MPS in a letter this week that their late submission could lead to the state issuing a notice to withhold aid. Now, they've already had withhold some aid in the past, I would say last few months. But MPS still needs to submit its fiscal aid certificate, their annual report. They missed that deadline on May 16th. The letter also noted that MPS needed to get audited financial data sent to DPI by the end of this month. So once again, they are still struggling as they've had a really big overhaul, at least from the administrative level down. They have a new superintendent. There's some new members as well on the board. So this is something that has really constantly been struggling and facing MPS. Whether they'll reach this next deadline remains to be seen.
Worth a budget note, the Joint Finance Committee took out, and then the governor had this incentive plan for MPS, do all this stuff, and some money in there. They took that out of the budget and they removed those 612 items a couple weeks ago.
All right, now we're going to move on to recapping some of the highlights of the state GOP convention that you and I were at in Rothschild this past weekend. Once again, there was a message of unity, and this really was a convention as Republicans tried to confront party divisions at their convention after another double-digit defeat in April. Now, this year's convention also came amid some finger-pointing at party leadership and growing frustration in how Republicans perform in non-presidential years. One individual who got a standing ovation was Senator Ron Johnson when he addressed convention goers, and he told them that the only way to win going forward is to unite the party. Let's just hear from some of his remarks.
Let's face it, as much as many would want Donald Trump to be on the ballot again, he won't be. He won't be. And we're going to have to figure out how we win without Donald Trump on the ballot here in Wisconsin. So that's just a hard truth. We're going to have to figure that out. I do ask the winners in these county races or district races to be gracious winners, to follow the rules, to be inclusive, to broaden the tent. That's the only way we're going to win. You're not going to win being disunified.
There was also a few other takeaways, too. You know, this was a convention that there was a lot of talk about Donald Trump. How do they win when Donald Trump is not on the ballot, just like what you heard from Ron Johnson? There was also a wild idea thrown out there by Derek Van Orden. When I asked him, I said, hey, what is the problem in spring elections? His response, we just don't vote. So I said, well, how do you resolve that? He floated the idea of getting rid of spring elections. That was something that, of course, you have to change the Constitution for. But it's been a talker for a few headlines, I would say, the rest of this week. Jared, what are some other, I guess, the takeaways sitting through many hours at the convention this past weekend?
Worth them, besides changing the Constitution, which says you can't have a judicial election within a certain time period of a partisan one, you would have a ballot that would have school board races on the same sheet, yay long, as the presidential race. But, you know, I have heard argument from Republicans of, look, the races for state superintendent, Supreme Court aren't nonpartisan anymore. Maybe we can move those to the fall. I don't know if it's going to get anywhere with Democrats, but that's another point. But Trump is kind of like over everything. So Trump carried them to victory in Wisconsin last fall in the presidential race. Trump voters didn't turn up in the spring. Yes, turnout was up for Republicans, for Brad Schimmel compared to what Daniel Kelly did a couple of years ago, but it turns up even more for liberals because Crawford did better than Protasiewicz. Why is that? They're more motivated. Democrats have now have the high propensity voters to turn out. Republicans have traded the built-in success they had in off-year elections for years for that every 4 years. In the presidential cycle, Trump's on the ballot, they're going to have really high turnout. That doesn't help you, though, in these off-year elections. So what do you do? Well, Brian Schimming, the state chair, has ordered a post-mortem. I talked to John Leiber, state treasurer. He's been put in charge of the thing. He hopes to have it done by early July to try and have some ideas. Now, they know the problems. They don't spend money very efficiently compared to Democrats. They have to figure out a way to engage Trump voters. And they've got a fractured base right now. That fractured base is because there's all this competition among these groups that do turnout, like Turning Point USA. They don't play well together right now. How do you fix that? So yeah, it's just really interesting. A party that was like flying high in November after Trump won is now like trying to figure out like what went wrong because of one race. But that one race is a 10-point loss, and they don't do well unless Trump's in the ballot. How do you fix that? It's a really big problem for them.
All right, let's get to stock picks this week as we talk about, obviously, moving on from the Republican convention to the Democratic convention, which is coming up in a few weeks in the middle of June, because it fits with our rising this week, which is Devin Remicker, who was endorsed by Ben Wickler, who is stepping down as chairman for Wisdoms.
So the three candidates in the race replace Wickler. Devin Remicker, who was political director and then executive director under Wickler of the state party. Joseph Pecky, who was an operative out of Milwaukee, and William Garcia, the third CD party chair. Of those three, William Garcia has this kind of platform of, I want to embolden county parties and put more resources there. Great message with certain parts of the base, but I've heard that message in lots of chair races, doesn't really win you a race. So really, it's kind of been about Zepecki and Remaker. And the whole time this has been going on, there's been this wink and nod that Devin is Ben's guy, because Devin worked with Ben. Oh, Devin also ran Ben's bid for national party chair. There's a perception of, hey, those guys are tied to the hip anyway. Ben said in April, when he said, I'm not going to run again, he would not endorse. Changed. Mm-hmm. So, okay, why? Is it A, he wants to try and send a message, like an overt one of, this is my guy, seal the deal? Is it that they thought that Zepecki was getting momentum and they wanted to try and tamp it down? People that debate that. What is clear, though, is now you have Wickler saying, this is my person. I'm endorsing Devin. Unless there's a backlash from the grassroots, that should help Devin in this race. Now, the other thing that's going to help is the perception that these races aren't really about if you're endorsed by Governor Evers or Tammy Baldwin. It's your relationship with the grassroots. Wickler had all these big endorsements in the DNC race. Didn't win because Ken Martin had worked with all these national committee members. He had the relationships. So Devin has had more time with these people who vote than Joe. That gives him a leg up, people think. And then Ben's endorsement probably helps a great deal.
All right, and Mix this week, going back to Chairman Brian Schimming of the Wisconsin Republican Party. Why? Because he's essentially survived efforts seeking for him to step down, to be removed as chairman. There was even a motion being passed around at the convention. It just never came to fruition.
So there are people unhappy about Schimming for a number of reasons. Losses, money, all these kinds of things. And there's an effort by Turning Point USA to take over. They want to gain a toehold so they can kind of get in charge of the RNC, Republican National Committee. In Wisconsin, the chair and national committee members are elected at state or by the state party. The chair by the executive committee. Turning Point wants to get into those positions to elect a chair. It's been pretty clear. There's been tension about that and other things. So all this chatter, are they going to try?
Yeah.
Is there going to be an effort to oust
them? There's a lot of whispers at the convention.
Here's the problem. The people who are new to the party, who were brought in by Trump, who have all this passion, they don't quite get like how things work. Brian wasn't up for election this week, past mm-hmm. weekend. He was elected in December of 2026, or 24, sorry. Every December, and even every year, they have an election. The executive committee picks the chair. There's a very complicated process to try to undo that. As long as Brian has the executive committee's confidence, he's probably going to be fine. Now, not to mean that there are problems, again, the losses, the money, and everything else, but these folks who have all this kind of like, we don't like Brian, they don't kind of get how things work. So all this talk about trying to have no confidence vote or depose him all petered out. Also, by the way, there is an election. This is super inside baseball. Election for two spots in executive committee. Their Turning Point endorsed people who ran and lost. So it suggests that these are fractured groups, factions of the party who are unhappy with Schimming and are trying to figure out what they can do. And their answer is not a whole lot. They don't have the majority. But you have that division. That division doesn't help you in elections. Brian needs to win. He needs money to win. If they don't turn that around, that's going to not help him do those things. And what's interesting is a decade ago, Republicans, the party was the grassroots. It kind of like mm-hmm. led the operation. Under Scott Walker, did a great job. Now they're disorganized and Democrats have, they call it the table, where all the groups, you know, not the candidates, but the groups are sitting at a table essentially saying, okay, I got this, you got that. They work together. Republicans don't. They have a sandbox and he's playing nicely right now, and Brian's got to figure out how to fix that.
All right. Following this week is Elon Musk. Why? Because he said earlier this week that he's going to cut back on political spending in the future, which could be a blow to Republicans in the midterm, but also it could be a hit to conservative Rebecca Bradley, who was running for state for Supreme Court.
And the reason why we're talking about Musk and Wisconsin folks talk about it is because we may have been the knockout blow for Elon Musk. Democrats, I'm sure you saw this, we're almost giddy about a line in New York Times story that said a source close to Musk said Wisconsin really opened his eyes, essentially, because remember, he spent, by my count, he dropped between his two groups that he funds, no indirect contributions to the party, about $25 million. That doesn't include the money for these petitions that he did. Remember, he gave out three $1 million checks and $100 if you sign this petition stuff. So mm-hmm. haven't seen that report yet to see how much was spent on that. But he went all in, and he became a focus of that race. It didn't go well. Oh, by the way, Tesla, struggling a little bit right now with the stocks. So we're talking about Wisconsin because this guy went all in here, got shellacked. Now he says he's pulling back. A couple of caveats. One, Musk was on Capitol Hill this week. It's not really going away. Two, you can spend money without your name being on it. There are these shadowy groups, you know, dark money groups. You can give them big checks and fund stuff that way. And then three, there are other wealthy people who could take his place. Now, maybe not the way that he's the most wealthiest guy in the world, so maybe not the same way, but Democrats are like, hey, we are pretty happy that we kind of pushed this guy aside, but we're not going to breathe easy just yet because he could come in later on or somebody else and do the same thing.
He can always change his mind, right?
Yeah.
All right, that will do it for This Week in Politics. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next time.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, Your Week in Review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.